7-0.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. You didn't hear me when I first came on because I didn't have one of my on buttons pushed. Today is Tuesday. It is the 22nd of February in the year 2005. I'm glad you've joined us this evening. I tried to get a hold of Alan Watt. Alan and I talked, and I told him yesterday that if I wasn't able to finish what I wanted to do last night, that I would finish today and I would get in touch with him. And I was thinking all day that he was coming on with us. And then I realized about 40 minutes ago that, oh my, I need to call him. And his line has been busy. And I cannot reach him. So I'm going to take your calls tonight if you would like to call in, folks. Let me share with you our spiritual message. This is the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Father, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me start over here. Father, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, let me sow pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, let me sow hope. Where there is darkness, let me sow light. And where there is sadness, joy. Dear Father, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born into eternal life. There is no death. There is no death. That wasn't part of the prayer, of course. That's my comment, folks. Well, here's what I thought we would do tonight. Let me give you the call-in number, in case you might like to call in. If any of you listening want to try to get a hold of Alan, I couldn't wait, of course, any longer. I'll give you his phone number, and if you can get a hold of him and he's available, maybe we can get him connected in. If you want to grab a pen, the phone number is 705, this is in Canada, 705-596-0416. And if you get a hold of him, ask him to give me a call. And we'll get him connected up. So until that, the call-in number, if you would like to call in tonight. We don't do this often, do we? It's only that I'm unprepared. I had company come in today. Steve Olson, one of our listeners who has become a friend. Steve has been a visitor in our home twice now, and he was here in January, actually saw the new year in with us in 2002, I believe it is. And he was here this summer when my grandchildren were here. They adored him. He had them laughing all the time. He was here. So Steve has come to visit for a few days. And my little precious friends, I call them my second granddaughters, Nikki and Jessie, are here. They're going to be my neighbors across the road. And so it seems to be either feast or famine here. Either I'm here by myself for long periods of time, and then I am blessed with the three precious friends. And they're sitting over there on the floor in the studio here like busy little bees, looking for a piece that I wanted to share with you tonight. I evidently took it out of the file, and I evidently didn't put it back in the file. And I guess Chuck told me 100 times he suggested, honey, if you would put things away when you're done with them, you would be able to find them when you want them. I pulled this out of the file probably to use a quote in the book. And when I'm working on the book, I get done with something, I lay it aside. I get something else, I lay it aside. And then there gets a big pile, so I take it off my desk and pile it on the floor. And somewhere it's over there. So tonight, the call-in number, if you would like to call in, is 570-537-3025. We'll talk about anything you'd like to talk about. 570-537-3025. So what I did, because I was so unprepared, is I've grabbed the book, The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and I thought we would take a review here, a review of some of the... I've got a lot of underlines and a lot of sticky notes all over these pages. And I thought maybe we would take a look and see in this past 100 years how they've fared in furthering their program, their plans for their program for world dominion. And I really would like to hear from you tonight, folks. 570-537-3025. I know that on shortwave there's a couple of minutes delay from the internet connection. And if you're listening on the internet and you'd like to call in, you could always disconnect and give me a call and then get connected back up again, I guess. 570-537-3025. So the book that I've got here, The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, this is translated from the Russian of Nihilus by Victor E. Marsden, the late Russian correspondent of the Morning Post. That was in London. And I want to share this. This is some of the commentary before the, because the first whole half of this book, and if you don't have it, I suggest that you would probably want to take a look at it. Every time I ask for calls and the phone rings, it makes me jump. Hi, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hi. Yeah, my name is Storm.
Storm?
Yeah.
Hi, Storm.
Oh, hi, how you doing? Listen, I heard you talking some things very interesting on your show. I'm sort of new with your show.
Oh, where are you calling from, Storm?
I'm calling from a place I don't even want to be. I'm calling from New York, not New York.
Well, we're right next door, dear. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know, since, are you taking a call on air?
You're on the air, Storm.
No, I said taking a call on air.
You are on the air right now, honey.
Well, how come when I'm listening, I hear something hearing?
It's because there's a little bit of a delay.
Oh, a very long one?
Yeah, about 2 minutes. You'll actually hear yourself when you're done. But if you've got your radio on, you want to turn it down.
Okay, all right, I'll turn it down.
All right,
okay,
honey.
I didn't know. Okay, you're on delay. That explains it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, a couple of things. One is this stuff in, hello? Yeah.
I'm here.
Okay, yeah, no, okay, that's all right. This stuff with the America, you know, criticizing the French.
Yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of this comes from, a lot of times the French, I don't agree with the immigration policy they got in France, and of course they got a political party they're trying to do.
What, I don't know about their political or their immigration policy.
Oh, it's insane like ours. They have a type of, well, you know, I won't go into it. I mean,
okay, in other words, it's open doors.
For every
what they call the, what do they call them? The minorities. Yeah.
But what is this? One French diplomat made a comment about the Israel called the SLC, and I'm not going to quote the S. I'll quote the other two letters. The first word was S. The second letter was
Well, yeah, that's because they wouldn't send any troops over to Iraq.
That's true. But the other thing is because of that little country over there in the Middle East.
You mean Israel?
I think you know what country I'm talking
about. Well, we can say it out loud on this broadcast, honey. It's called Israel.
All right. Well, I call it is not.
Okay.
But it really isn't. But,
that's cool.
Right. But you know what the S stands for. You said it outright. So
yeah.
There's a lot of anti-French stuff going on off and on, and it has to do with Israel as well as, you know, the stuff in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is something interesting. With this stuff with Israel and this global stuff, I found out stuff about the income tax, and I think if somebody were to go to, I think it's called besttaxshelter.com.
Yeah.
There's a guy named Dana Yule, and he's better than Aaron Schiff when it comes to the income tax, because Aaron Schiff has a lot of little things that are, he's right and he's wrong.
Irwin.
But, yeah, right. But Dana Yule, which I think is spelled E-W-E-L-L, he says he has a situation, a setup, but it's kind of expensive. But he has a setup where you, once you get out of this, you won't have to go to court as far as involving the IRS.
And it's called besttaxshelter.com?
Yes. Oh, matter of fact, let me give you all of them. Hold on. So,
okay, well, wait. Just a minute, Storm.
Okay.
Alan Watt is on the other line there.
Yes.
Have you heard Alan yet with us?
No, I haven't.
All right.
I only listened to your show like a couple of weeks.
Okay, honey. Well, Alan is calling probably to call in to be on the broadcast. So what I'm going to have to do...
Let me hang up and call back later.
Or the next time we are taking callers. Yeah, can we do that?
Right, because he's coming and he only has one line. Okay.
Thanks.
All right, let me ask you, is there some time I could talk to you about something about Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
When you're off the air?
Okay.
That would be the best time.
Okay, the number that you just called... 570-537-3025.
That's correct.
Call me at 3035.
Wait, hold on, let me write this.
The same number, but the end is 3035, Storm.
3035.
Yeah, that's
fine. But I'm saying what time? That'd be a good time.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Sometime after 10 a.m., honey.
Or even aim it tonight?
No, not tonight.
Okay, tomorrow?
Yeah, that would be fine.
But after 10 a.m.?
Yep.
All right, okay.
Okay.
All right, anytime in the afternoon?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye, thanks. All right, tell Alan. Alan, you want to come on? Okay, I'm going to disconnect and ask Nicholas to play some music. And so I'm going to have to disconnect you, too, because I've got... No, I'm not. Yeah, I am, because I have to plug you into the other phone. So you have to call me back, hon. Okay, thanks. Okay, now... Don't answer the phone if it rings. Folks, I'm going to disconnect. And if Nicholas is listening, Nicholas, if you would play some music, I'd appreciate it. Alan Watt is going to call in. And folks, we're going to have about 30 seconds of silence here unless the music is playing. So don't go away, okay? I'll be back. Hello? Alan?
Yeah.
All right. Folks, we're back on here. And I hope that we didn't lose anybody. I think that was pretty fast work, switching phone lines around and et cetera. Alan Watt is with us. Alan, I apologize for not calling you earlier today. I was thinking all day long that we had already set it up. You were coming on tonight.
Oh, no.
And I got company this afternoon and some more company tonight. And it occurred to me at about 20 after 8, and then your doggone line was busy.
Yeah.
So thanks for calling in.
It's no problem. I got a barrage of callers. Yeah.
You got a barrage of callers?
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks. So what are we going to talk about? Because we really, you know, you were telling me about meeting that you had seen. Was it a CFR meeting, Alan, or something? You were telling me about it just recently.
Oh, it was a trilateral. They called it a trilateral meeting.
Yeah.
It was held in Montreal last week, and it was sponsored by the CFR from the New York branch. They paid for it all, yes.
Uh-huh.
And it was about the integration of America, you know, Canada, the States.
Yeah, well, would you mind sharing some of that with our listeners? And now, where did you see this, Alan?
It was on the regular news.
In Canada.
Uh-huh, yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Now, they're talking about Canada, too, when they're talking about the Americas.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, no, it's been on the table for a long time. And it's been denied, of course, for a long time as well. They give you both messages simultaneously down through the years. Yes, we're talking about joining. No, we're not talking about joining. And then eventually, of course, they come more open with it. And since the free trade negotiations, in reality, that's when it was first discussed that Canada, the U.S., Mexico, and then others, especially Chile, would unite to form a form of United States of America,
mm-hmm.
To compete with Europe. So at this meeting they had last week, they talked about the desirability of this merger and a new currency to speed it along too, and a single government.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A single government.
Uh-huh.
Wonder what they call the American dollar, the Ameridollar or the Amero or...
Yeah, and in fact, I think I read in the papers a while ago that they had tossed different names around for a common currency.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what it was.
You know, I've shared this with our listeners. In fact, I've transcribed it also in the book that's still in progress, uh-huh. Jewish Persecution, online at sweetliberty.org. I have a book here from this place down in Quakertown, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and it's an Illuminati Clymer is the name of the founder of this place, I think.
Yeah.
And this was the, I think they called it the 34th Convocation.
Uh-huh.
This was a message from this Swinburne Clymer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way a long time ago, back in the 20s or 30s. And he was saying that the capstone on the pyramid, and on their property, by the way, is a smaller version of the big pyramid,
yeah.
Without the capstone. And he says that the reason that the capstone has not been put on yet is that it won't happen until the America
mm-hmm.
is once again joined with Mexico. That's how he put it.
Yeah.
And it's been in the plan. He said something about Egypt, but it's been in the plan for all these millennia.
Yeah.
And so that when they have it all joined, and he hoped that would happen without bloodshed.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So.
But I know that during, as I say, the free trade negotiations, the top Canadian bureaucrat or civil servant was called Shelley-Ann Clark, and she typed up all of the negotiation books for the main negotiations. And afterwards, she came out publicly and tried to tell the people of Canada that look, it's a sellout. We're merging with them around the year 2005.
Mm.
You know, that was the initial they planned on. So who knows? They certainly still want it. Now they're public about it. And I think what they're doing too is testing the reaction of the people by announcing that they had a meeting.
Sure.
You know, to see what would happen.
Well, I doubt we'll see anything like that in the near future here in the States.
Yeah. Well, I think that with this Middle Eastern fracas, they'll have to keep the taxpayers in the States quite happy for until that's completed. And maybe then they'll pull the plug.
Mm-hmm.
And then use that for an economic disaster as a reason for merging. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I think they wanted to join by 2005, 2006, but I cannot see it in the immediate future, unless they do collapse the economy very quickly.
And we know that they can do that anytime they want.
Yes, they can.
I remember back in, gosh, I think it was around probably 93 when I was very new to this. And you read these, forecasts, these financial forecasts.
Yes.
Al and I was convinced that by October of 93 it was all going to be all over.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You know.
Well, it doesn't take much, and I know that Shelley Ann Clark, when she tried to get the word out to the Canadian people, she said that that would be the reason that would be given at the time, would be we're in trouble financially, so is the U.S., and it's too cumbersome to have so many governments with its separate bureaucracies trying to compete with a united Europe. And the Pacific Rim conglomeration.
You know, that occurs to me that that's going to fall perfectly in their plan of the trilateral commission.
Oh, yeah.
The three, like in George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah.
They had their three large regions, would you call it?
That's right. They had East Asia and West Asia and Oceania.
Oceania,
yeah.
Yes.
So sure, but Karl Marx wrote about this in the 1840s.
And the wars.
Mm-hmm.
When we go back to George Orwell's 1984,
yeah.
How they would, two of them would be against one,
yeah.
And then suddenly they were the enemies, they were the allies of their enemy,
right.
And they acted like, and the people accepted it, like, oh, okay, it's always been this way.
That's right.
And this is exactly what's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, we had a caller just before you called in, and he was talking about France and how the America has been really biting France. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now we're hearing that, oh, Russia has supplied Iran with nuclear warheads.
Yeah.
They're pulling it off already.
Yes, I know.
And getting people to believe
mm-hmm.
that... oh, well, Germany is no longer our ally. France is no longer our ally.
Yeah. And just on tonight's news, they've tentatively announced that Canada is joining the U.S. with this new anti-missile defense system that they're going to set up in the north of Canada.
Another merger?
Supposedly for, again, in case Russia, I guess, you know, who's left, the Eskimos, I mean... who's going to attack you?
Mm-hmm.
So once again, they're setting up Russia as possibly the bad guy. But really, this was back for thousands of years. The necessity of government that really is an elite with a bureaucracy running over the people under the pretense of protecting them from those guys over there.
Mm-hmm.
And when those guys over there are often their own kin. Who were running those countries. And that was the farce of the European wars for centuries, was that the British king was off or sending these guys off to fight the French king. And when they weren't fighting the French king, who was a cousin of his,
yeah.
He's off fighting the king of Holland, who was also his cousin.
Of course, the kings never fought, just...
No, but they all borrowed heavily from the bankers to
uh-huh.
support these wars. And then it taxed the people to pay it all back. So they live very comfortably on war.
This is for our listeners who may not be aware of this or who have not heard it when I have mentioned it, that, and I have read this in a couple or three different books or publications or speeches, that when they were planning World War I more overtly, because I know that in 1906, Norman Dodd had mentioned reading about it in the archives of the Carnegie Foundation.
Yeah.
And they had a question that they asked: is there any way better than war or other than war, or is there a way to change, make a change in a nation or culture that it can never change back again? And they formed the commission, and they came up with the answer, and they said, no, war is the way to make the change.
Yes.
And they started planning World War I, and even the fact that it would take place or be started in the Balkans.
Yeah.
And then they decided that they would wait until the U.S. Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act so that the American people could pay for it.
Yep.
And in 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, and in 1914, World War I was begun.
Yeah.
So if their plans, I mean, if anybody doubts what you're saying, or how long this plan and how well planned it is,
yeah,
we only need to find these little bits and pieces for the confirmation, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that the they had after they fought Napoleon, they had a big meeting with the elite of Europe and the Vatican. And they basically divvied up tracts of land to each other and discussed the future wars, where they would be, who would benefit and who the winners would be, etc. And they planned the future even back then.
When was this?
That was in the late 1800s, the Concert of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's another one before that, the Concert of Vienna, they called it.
Council?
Yeah, and they actually divvied up the lands between the conquerors and settled all the loans, etc., and the interest rates that would be paid by each nation, and even the possibility of new wars and a united Europe, you know.
Yeah.
So it's never ending. It's never ending. And I think one of the best books to read on that is the autobiography of Bertrand Russell, because he worked for the British Intelligence Service. He was also a British lord, and he took his job was to set up a protest movement against nuclear war, and again with the Hegelian dialectic.
Set up a protest.
Yeah. He formed what was called the Committee of 100, and these were the 100 leaders of large anti-nuclear weapon protest groups. But they were the active branch. They were the ones who would go in and knock down the fences around the American airports and storm over the airports, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, by using this technique of the dialectic, it's something the Hegelian method of opposites. He said we can create global government. When the people are terrified enough, they will ask for global government.
Yeah, I've got a quote here by him.
Uh-huh.
He was a UNESCO advisor.
Yep.
And of course, UNESCO is labeled, if you would, the global school board.
Yeah.
He said it may be hoped that in time, anybody will be able to persuade anybody of anything if he can catch the patient young and is provided by the state with money and equipment. When the technique has been perfected, every government that has been in control of education for a generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the need of armies or policemen.
Yes, that's right. That was in The Impact of Science on Society.
In Bertrand Russell's book?
Yeah.
Impact of
Science on Society.
Of Science on Society.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he went right through it, and he quoted Euclid and some of the ancient Greek philosophers, and because they did experimentation on mind control back in ancient Greece.
Yeah, okay, look, we have to take our break, 60-second break. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Yeah.
Okay, folks? We'll be back in 60 seconds. Alan Watt is our guest. And thank you for your patience with the sometimes less than seemingly organized fashion that this broadcast has brought to you. We'll be back. Put your pen in hand, please, so you can take my address down.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
Okay, folks, we're back with you. Alan, are you there?
Yeah.
I had to go out and find the shortwave radio for Steve so he could listen.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now you had said that in Greece they were practicing mind control.
Oh, yeah.
And now, it would give us a timeline here.
What, 2,400 years ago.
Okay.
They were one of the big philosophers there at the time, because they all had the little schools, their followings of students. And he tried with the very young children.
Now, who are we talking about?
It was Euclid, or one of Euclid's students.
Okay.
I remember. But he did say that he taught them that the color of snow was black, you see, and things along that line, and so that when they grew, you know, a few years from then, they let them out to meet other children, and they would say, oh, the snow was black. And of course, when other children from outside heard that, they'd laugh and mock them, and these young students didn't know what was wrong with them, because they had been taught logically that that's what you call the color of snow. And so he used that, Bertrand Russell used that as an example in his book, the Impact of Science in Society. And in other words...
Is religion a science?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Everything was tried through religion. So Russell said that if you can get a child, preferably around the age of two, which would mean bringing in kindergarten, especially sponsored by the state, which we have now in Canada.
Yes.
It says any input from the parents' value system.
So is it in Canada,
yeah,
is it a free babysitting thing for parents?
They just passed a law about a month ago to extend it across the whole of Canada. So I don't know how far it's gone.
But what I mean is, so, in other words, working parents would find that a wonderful opportunity,
yeah,
for their children and for them,
mm-hmm,
because if it is a public government-funded project, then they wouldn't have to be paying babysitters.
That's right.
Or daycare centers, so that I would imagine that those people who are financially depressed,
mm-hmm,
or oppressed, whatever we would call it,
yeah,
would jump at the opportunity.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. And actually, the parents themselves, who are around 25 years of age or so, are one step beyond their parents towards accepting this as normal, because many of them went to kindergarten and so on.
And in preschool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right, preschool. Yeah.
I can remember when they were, the U.S. Congress was having hearings on Goals 2000.
Uh-huh.
They were, one of the big things, I kept hearing it over and over and over again, that all children will enter school ready to learn.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, when they go to kindergarten, they start them off right there. Most kindergarten schools have symbols and images of the world. We are a global village. You'll see that slogan everywhere. We are one family. And so they're being prepared already for that. But even then, I mean, this has been an ongoing intergenerational change towards this agenda,
yeah,
or the progression of this agenda for a long time, but speeding up in the last 100 years.
What occurred to me when you were talking about this and I was thinking about the people who are financially strapped, jumping at it. They time everything at the perfect time for them, don't they?
Oh, yes. Well, when you look, too, at the school buses that go around even rural areas, and they stop door to door and pick up children, you see? So, you know, no child is left behind, as they say. They make sure that everyone gets the same indoctrination.
Mm-hmm.
And just like in ancient Greece, if they're taught that snow is black, they'll all say the same thing, and they'll think, well, we must be normal because we all agree.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you think about it, we're a global village, we are all one and all that. Mm-hmm. On a spiritual level, we are one. And I think that that plays to people who don't realize the insidious outcome of what they plan for everybody. It pulls their heartstrings, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know, but I can understand that sometimes it's best not to tell everybody everything that's happening, because it's so bad most people couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. We're living in a fantasia that we call normal, and it's really masterful mind control. And our parents have been under it too. And this has been going on for a long time, this whole technique, you know, of mind control. Very few people question the system that they live in as they go through it. They see things that aren't quite right, so they think, well, I'll vote somebody else in and things will change for the better.
Yeah, right.
But in reality, this is an agenda, and it's the best of it is you don't have to go into conspiracy books to find it. It's in old history books prior to 1900, regular old history books.
You mean people in history books, mm-hmm, that students were getting?
Yeah, because prior to 1900, most people who could read and write were part of the wealthier class.
I see.
So they were writing for themselves, to themselves, and they wouldn't upset the apple cart themselves, since they were being rewarded by it. But they could quite more openly discuss things, and there was more outlets for individual publishers. Who didn't at that time really need a license in some countries, you know.
Do you think that within these families every now and then there's a black sheep? The reason I'm asking, I remember quite a few years ago reading about a Rothschild that was found hung in a hotel room or something.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
And it makes you wonder if maybe he was slipping out of the grips of the family. I don't know. I don't even remember where I read this. I don't know if there's any truth in it at all. But that a Rockefeller, some son of the Rockefeller family somewhere, was in Africa and wound up dead.
That was Israel. Yeah.
Was it Israel?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he'd been in a whorehouse, and he died. He was high on cocaine and other drugs. And,
okay.
He had a heart attack. So the Mossad pulled him out into the street and put him in a car, thinking to avoid the scandal of where he died. But eventually it blew out into the press what happened. You know.
Okay, well, the way I read it is that he was on some junket or something over in Africa.
Well, he was on a junket, all right. Different type.
Yeah.
A different
So do you think that ever, though, that somehow they slip out of the grasp of their indoctrination, their mind control?
I don't think too much they slip out as slip up with arrogance or maybe too many drugs.
Okay.
And they get loose-lipped and boastful. And or they could have a weakness. I think the one that was found hung in the bathroom, that the Rothschild was homosexual, and
well, I thought they all were, Alan.
Yeah, but he was really, he had a lover, and
blatant, in other words.
Yeah, but not so much the fact that he had one. I think he was starting to disclose things you shouldn't tell him.
Okay.
So secrecy is very important.
Uh-huh.
And they're monitored as well, in case they ever do slip up. Or they can find out what has been said, and they can try and remedy it before it hits the papers. They are monitored.
Uh-huh. The situation over there in England?
Yeah.
Like with Princess Di and that, do you think that... what do you think was behind all of that?
Everyone knows the only reason that she was chosen to marry Charles was simply for the offspring.
For her, because of the royal blood.
For the royal blood and the fact that just looking at Charles, you can tell that they're two inbred. They had to branch out a little.
Okay, because she was pretty.
Yeah, and Charles is an odd-looking guy. And his sister, Anne, who likes horses, kind of looks like one, too.
And the Queen is not such a...
No.
Uh-huh.
So they were so inbred, and it was in the papers at the time, all of these reasons. It was more open at that time as to why they'd chosen someone slightly outside the usual coterie, you know. But... Once there were, he performed his duty, you might say, and she had the offspring. Charles was off with the boys as usual, all the time, playing polo across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never. I even think this lining him up now with this woman he's going to marry is just another publicity stunt.
And who is this?
Camilla Parker Bowles.
Who?
Camilla Parker Bowles.
Okay, is that the one that he was allegedly in a romance with during their marriage?
Yeah, but I really think she's more of a mother figure, a confidant to him, because he was never interested in women.
Okay.
And so, but it's good PR for the public, who must believe he's straight and all the rest of it. At one time, his uncle, Mountbatten, Tricky Dicky, they called him. He was a blatant homosexual. It was no secret. He was worried that Charles was also so homosexual that he would never produce offspring.
Oh.
And so Mountbatten hired or rented an apartment in London and put some really high class whores in there to try and interest Charles, but it didn't work. So. They went to quite a lot of lengths to try to get him interested in women. And then they did PR shots to convince the public that he was straight.
So are the boys his?
Who knows?
Uh-huh.
Who knows? I mean, it might have been done artificially for all we know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very possibly.
But they did a PR campaign. It cost millions of pounds at that time. And they were taking Charles across the globe, and they were hiring dozens of models in Australia and elsewhere who would run towards him on the beach as though he was a really attractive fella, you know. So that's how far they were going to convince the public that he was a real ladies' man. But that was so far from the truth. But that's the world that we live in. That's always been their world, though, you know. That's always been their world. They're matched up simply for their genetic lineages. And once they have performed their duty, as they call it, the husband can do what he wants, and so can the wife. That's always been the way of the aristocracy.
And so can the wife?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. As long as she doesn't give birth to a child outside of the marriage, you know. So they have their own. They used to have their own personal or royal abortionists, hired full time. We would just go around the aristocratic families.
And what do you believe that it's true that Diana was pregnant by the?
I don't know.
Uh huh.
You know, we'll never know.
You don't know, because there has been this speculation, of course, that the fact that she was engaged to this Arab, I guess, was he?
Yeah.
That they just couldn't abide by that.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. But also she was beginning to be... she was becoming too popular. She'd gone on BBC and asked to go on BBC and started to explain some of the problems she had in the marriage. And she'd done part one of that. She was going to do part two. And I think she was going to go a lot further and tell the British people too much. That's why I think she got right. Yeah. Because she was too popular and people were listening. And if she had done the second part of that BBC documentary, who knows what she might have said.
Why do you think they keep the royal family in England? It is just a figurehead.
They're figureheads, and it's also a symbol of the system. And the system is based on elite, a eugenics paradise for the elite there.
Uh-huh.
It is eugenics. That's the only reason that they are royalty, is because of their bloodline, which they believe are superior to the ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
And the British royal family, remember, is related to all the other royal families across Europe. They intermarry with each other and have done for centuries and centuries. But they are a symbol of the system.
Yeah, they called haemophilia the royal disease, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the royal diseases.
And it was carried by the mother, right?
Yes, passed on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they also had madness too. You know, King George went nuts at one point. Sort of manic depression, that was common in them too. But no, they are a symbol of superior genes, supposedly.
In the protocols, where they talk about getting rid of the monarchies,
mm-hmm.
Why was the plan for that?
It wasn't for all the monarchies. That was the thing too. Eventually, what they wanted was to phase out their status in the public eye, but those same families would still be up there holding the wealth. You know, they do hold an incredible amount of wealth, and they have incredible investments in some of the largest multinational corporations on the planet. So it wouldn't matter if they eventually stepped down, as they say, from the limelight. It would make no difference in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Because technically they're not ruling anything anymore. Technically. Sometimes I wonder if they are, though, you know. Because I know that the Bilderbergers meetings, the Queen goes there with a few other ones from the royal family. They are in on a lot of what's going on. But, I think one day they might just step down, but still retain this incredible wealth that they have. And they'll still continue to inbreed amongst themselves anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's a whole aristocracy that just simply inbreeds. And they're all... In fact, this Parker Bowles that Charles is going to marry, her ancestor was the mistress, one of the mistresses of Henry VIII.
My, who would that be, do you know?
I can't remember which one, but that shows you how close all these people are.
Wow.
You know, right down to the present. So she was the mistress of Charles, and her ancestor was the mistress of Henry VIII. You know? So, yeah, these people are so close, they're almost a separate race.
Except for their little bastards running around, huh?
Oh, yeah, but they generally know who they are. In fact, they have legalized bastards who also have rights to titles and so on. If they get authorized by the father, and that's where the term in Ireland comes from, Fitz, like Fitzsimmons or Fitzgerald. Fitz means that you were born outside the royal wedlock, but you have a claim to title.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, they did a lot of... they were very promiscuous. That's for the ones that were straight, that is. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's a complex history of aristocracy. And of course, the Catholic Church for 1,500 years maintained this particular system. They were right behind.
Yes, they were, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They called that the natural order. And of course, that's why religion itself, which comes from the lunar, the stellar, and the solar mystic religions, that's where it comes into play, because technically the kings and queens were the gods on earth, which were also represented in the sky, in the zodiac. And of course the Vatican was symbolic of the deity that ruled the universe, and that's what they called the natural order, as above, so below. So yeah, this was a traditional system that had been in play even before they changed their hats in the Roman Church and stopped worshipping Jupiter, you know, and changed it to Jesus. But it's the same religion, same technique, same system. And the sciences, as we say, of mind control were perfected long, long before Christianity ever got on the go.
Well, any of the religions,
mm-hmm.
regardless what the religion was,
yeah.
The people totally believed in it,
mm-hmm.
and in the gods, whether the god was in a tree or,
yeah.
you know, there were multiple gods or, you know, the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was... that when I asked you that question, when you were talking about how they could take a child and actually have them see that the color, that snow is black,
mm-hmm.
and believe it, and I thought about how deep and strong the religious beliefs
yeah.
run in people,
mm-hmm.
That it is like it's in the cells.
And no
amount of reasoning
mm-hmm.
Or anything. And if there's a question they can't answer,
mm-hmm.
they just say, I don't understand that yet.
Yes.
I don't understand it yet. And discrepancies,
mm-hmm.
they see the discrepancies. They say, yes, that is a contradiction, but it can't be because God doesn't contradict himself.
Yeah.
So they look at a contradiction and say that it isn't one.
Yeah. You must always bridge the gap or jump over it. But yeah, this is the technique of making people believe whatever. It's not too difficult if you have all media, all written works, all novels, all movies, all saying the same thing. You see, that's how sanity is compared. You compare your sanity by your opinions and bouncing them off those around you. And if you all agree on the same topic, same things, even though none of it's true, if you all believe the same thing, then you say, well, I must be sane because they all say the same thing.
Uh-huh.
So if you're taught as a group that snow is black and you all say that, you say, well, of course I'm sane. And snow is black, and they all agree. And that's the simplicity of mind control. It's mainly repetition on controlled groups. And as long as all seemingly unrelated media or material comes your way and confirms that, and you don't catch on that they're all part of that,
mm-hmm.
then you'll think you're normal, and so will everyone else around you.
But you know, it's like the God Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
In the Old Testament, there are people who say, okay, well, you're wrong because his name wasn't Jehovah.
Yeah.
His name was Yahweh.
Yeah.
And so that makes all the difference in the world, Alan?
I know, but this is just magical thinking. Magical thinking was always based on, in ancient times, that if you get the God's name or the deity's name or the genie's name, then you had control and authority over the deity.
Is that why in the Old Testament it says, if my people repent and call me by my name?
Yes.
Because that's a big one for people who are steeped into the Jehovah, quote, / Yahweh doctrine.
That's the exoteric. That's the exoteric meaning of Jehovah. Yeah. There's an esoteric meaning to Jehovah, too. And
what is the esoteric meaning?
Well, it's actually four words. It's Yod Heh Vah Heh, and it's earth, air, fire, and water.
Yahweh?
Yeah.
Is what?
Earth, air, fire, and water.
Really?
Yeah. Which is behind all of the mystery groups right down to the present. Yeah.
Yahweh means earth, air, fire, and water?
Yeah.
Do the Jews know this?
The rabbis do.
Well, what do the Jewish people think it is? It's Hebrew.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they think what they're told to think, and they're content with very little, really.
Okay.
Because most of them aren't terribly religious. You know. They're quite content with what they're getting.
So that is very, very materialistic when you think about it.
Oh, it is. It's
the God of this world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Of this world, this third dimensional material world.
Mm-hmm. It's a ball of mud, yeah.
A ball of mud, uh-huh.
But no, it's religion, as I say, has been perfected long, long before even the Greeks ruled the world. It was all known by the ancient Egyptians, and they'd already run the world, that ancient world, for 5,000 years before the Greeks came along. And I've no doubt, actually, the pyramids are a lot older than they claim.
Really?
Yeah, because even the one when they base it all on Cheops or Khufu, as the Egyptians call them, and the Greeks call them Cheops. One dedication inside the pyramid, and so they say, well, that must have been built during Khufu's reign. But no, the Egyptian kings commonly rededicated their name to all monuments. So I've no doubt it's far, far older.
Well,
of course, the three pyramids are the three wise men. They are the belt of Orion.
Oh, wow.
Orion.
Alan?
Yeah.
We're out of our hour.
Uh-huh.
Do you, is there more that you could do on this if we did this tomorrow?
Sure.
All right. I mean, can we start right here?
Yes, as long as you remember where we are.
I've got notes.
Okay.
Thank you. We're out of our hour. Folks, we'll be back with you tomorrow night. Alan will be back with us. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Do remember that the broadcast you're listening to is sponsored by you, our listeners. Thank you for being here. God bless you, folks. Thank you, Alan. And tomorrow night, I don't have to get a hold of you. You'll get a hold of me. Thank you. Good night. Good night, folks.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.